Think Again with Borderlands Cooperative.
Join us for critical conversations about things that matter.
Every Friday at 10 a.m. on 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on your dial.
And 3CR Digital, streaming live at 3cr.org.au.
So together, let's think again about important matters affecting us, like economics,
politics,
education,
health,
climate,
and what we can do about it all.
Welcome to our 312th program of Think Again. We're broadcasting from 3CR Studio on the land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. Think Again is a program of Borderlands Cooperative, an organisation working for social change for 28 years. I'm Jennifer Burrell, your host today, while Jacques is busy helping organise a community development conference at Borderlands in October. But I'm really pleased to be joined by Annika Reynolds today, who is the Australian Conservation Foundation's National Climate Policy Advisor. Annika's going to talk about some recent, really important developments in Australia's climate policy. And this follows a recent interview with ACF's CEO on Think Again in late May. Welcome to the program, Annika Reynolds.
Thanks so much, Jen. It's lovely to be here.
Real pleasure. So firstly, Annika, can you tell us about your role with the ACF and some of your own background?
Yeah, thanks, Jen. So firstly, I want to just acknowledge that I'm calling in from Ngunnawal and Ngambri country, also known as Canberra, and it's lovely to join everyone down there in Wurundjeri country. As you kind of flagged, Jen, I'm ACF's National Climate Policy Advisor, and it's kind of in the name. I lead on our federal climate policy and law reform work. I work with a team of dedicated campaigners tackling some of the biggest climate issues in Australia, our domestic transition, but also really critically the international action that Australia needs to take, which really centres on our fossil fuel exports, which make up to 4.5% of global emissions. As you can probably imagine, with that kind of workload, my background is actually legal. I have a focus on energy and environmental law. I did a bit of academic work, and my most recent role before ACF was actually with an international climate think tank. So I really believe in the power and importance of systemic change, but have really seen through my work before coming to ACF that having, you know, a good idea or a law reform policy that you think really works is not enough. You actually need the power of the community and people backing you up. And at ACF, good climate advocacy is backed up by our 600,000 supporters, and that's how we get change.
And that's a lot of people, 600,000. And, of course, that's why it's one of the reasons it's great to have you on the program today, so that our listeners can really hear what you have to say about the latest developments in our climate policy. And, of course, it's very timely to have you on the program today with recent developments related to climate change really hitting the news, namely approval given to extend the life of the major Northwest Shelf gas project by 40 years off Western Australia, followed by the release of the National Climate Risk Assessment Report, and then the Australian government setting an emissions reduction target for 2035. So it's a lot of information, especially the climate risk assessment report. So can you talk about these, Annika, and help us make sense of it all?
Yeah, I can imagine that for many listeners right now, it's been a very big climate week. I wouldn't be surprised if your head is spinning. Mine certainly has been. But yeah, as you said, Jen, there's been a series of major and overwhelmingly just confronting and disappointing announcements. I think it's important to name that. So the week before last, the final approval after this protracted kind of negotiation process of Woodside's Northwest Shelf gas project was announced. That is a massive gas hub that would be operating off the northwest of WA until 2070. We've estimated that the Northwest Shelf, which is the centrepiece of Woodside's Burrup Hub development, that's what Woodside calls it and advertises it as, will result in about 6 billion lifetime emissions, which is just an extraordinary, almost impossible number to wrap your head around. Mm. It's entire percentage points of our remaining global budget for 1.5, and it's over 13 times Australia's annual emissions. That was a big blow and a really disappointing outcome from the Albanese government. It puts the number of approvals that this government has given to polluting coal and gas projects into the 30s since they got elected in 2022. And then, of course, last week we saw two big kind of systemic announcements. First, the climate risk assessment report on Monday, and then the target announcement on the Thursday. And as you've kind of noted, Jen, the climate risk assessment in particular is a lot of information. It's our first really national government-led detailed assessment of what different global warming scenarios will mean for Australia, and those were the global warming scenarios of 1.5 degrees, 2 degrees and 3 degrees. Now, right now, Australia, because we're such a large landmass, we're already experiencing annual temperature increases of around 1.5, although we haven't breached that threshold globally. And right now, Climate Action Tracker and a variety of other global sources kind of estimate that we will hit 2.7 to 2.9 degrees of global warming by the end of the century. So that 3-degree scenario is actually, there's still, we are on a trajectory towards that scenario right now, as stressful as that is.
So, Annika, that's if it's business as usual, we keep doing what we're doing now?
Yeah, that's exactly it, Jen. I mean, the good thing about global climate action is that prior to the Paris Agreement in 2015, the globe was on track for over 4 degrees of global warming. We've now brought that down by an estimated degree. We're into the 3-degree range. But what we really need to see is greater action from every government around the world. But in Australia, as Australians, the main government that we can influence is our own, and we needed to see much higher and more ambitious action from them in the announcement of the 2035 target last week.
Annika, sorry, can I just ask you, when we talk about the target, is that just emissions domestically, or does that include what we're exporting?
It's a good question, Jen, and unfortunately, our target, and as is typical for governments around the world, it only includes our domestic emissions. Mm. So our exported fossil fuel emissions, which are the vast majority of the negative contribution that we make to climate change, they are not directly regulated by our climate target. That being said, fossil fuel extraction is a really dirty, polluting process in and of itself. It causes a lot of emissions in the first instance. To look at the Northwest Shelf Extension project that we just talked about. The Northwest Shelf is the third most polluting facility in the country. It's beaten out by two other gas terminals, and it emits about 6 million tonnes of carbon dioxide equivalent every year, including in acidic emissions that are impacting the Indigenous rock art in the area that listeners might have heard about. So our domestic climate targets do have an impact on our fossil fuel exports to the extent that our domestic climate targets should be pushing those domestic emissions from those fossil fuel facilities down. Unfortunately, the Albanese government has committed to a really weak and unambitious target that doesn't reflect what Australia can and should do, and of 62% to 70%, well below what the science or the economics suggests is feasible and necessary. And that leaves a lot of space for those fossil fuel emissions.
Yes, and I think our good faith as a nation has been brought into question, because how can you be genuinely walking on the international stage and announcing you care about climate change and you're setting these targets when just before you've approved something like this, the gas project on the Northwest Shelf? Just before, and I think one thing that really jumps out at me about that is we seem to have this strange system where we have we have the Climate Change and Energy Minister, Chris Bowen, and we have the Environment Minister, Murray Watt. Now, Murray Watt is the one who approved the Woodside Energy to extend the life of the Northwest Shelf gas project by 40 years to 2070. Apparently, under the legislation he's working within, he's not obliged to take climate into account. I think there's a bit of ambiguity around that. He can, but he doesn't have to. So first of all, you think, how can you take environment into account without taking climate into account? But the other thing too, it looks a little bit tricky, doesn't it? Like one minister, with one hand you can approve gas projects through the Environment Minister, Murray Watt, and through the other hand you can, you know, Climate Change and Energy Minister, with the other hand you can go around saying, oh, we care about climate change and we're doing something about it. So can you explain that, or have I got it wrong?
No, Jen, you're dead on, unfortunately. It's the Albanese government really wants to walk on both sides of the street here, and has had the opportunity to reform our national nature laws that you're referring to, the EPBC Act, and could have done it last term to get climate embedded into our national nature laws. Climate is one of the biggest threats to nature in Australia, and the climate risk assessment confirms that in really dire terms. There were parts of the climate risk assessment that explain that, and I'm quoting here, marine biota in the Southern Ocean has no room to move. It will need to adapt or will die out under global warming scenarios. So when we look at the South Australian algal bloom and the devastation of the communities over there, that's exactly what the climate risk assessment is flagging, that climate change will turbocharge and make those kinds of events more devastating and more likely. You would think that the federal government, in our nature laws that are meant to be protecting our most significant natural places and species from threats, would take into account climate change. But they don't. And governments have continued to resist opportunities to interpret that legislation more broadly to account for climate impacts. Right now, the Albanese government is looking at nature law reform again this term, and it's an essential moment for the government to actually grapple with this disconnect. Our national nature laws need to deal with the biggest threats to nature, and that means climate change needs to be embedded in the Act.
Yeah.
It doesn't pass the pub test to have Minister Watt saying that he can't even acknowledge or recognise that the Northwest Shelf is going to be the biggest carbon bomb in the Southern Hemisphere. It's a pretty appalling situation all around.
It's incomprehensible, excuse me, which is why I was double-checking that I had it right. Because looking at the climate risk assessment report. So when I was reading through the shortened version of it, I could see that they were being cautious. They don't want to make any statements that don't have irrefutable data or evidence. So there's no educated guesses in there. And so at the very high level of confidence, they say there's going to be an increase in bushfires, an increase in dangerous fire days. Oceans around Australia will be more acidic and warmer. There'll be drying in the southwest and increased drought. Excuse me. Sea levels around Australia will continue to rise. Extreme temperatures are likely to increase nationwide. Now, which of those aren't going to affect the environment?
No, exactly, Jen. And one of the things that's also kind of that I found personally really confronting when I was reading through the climate risk assessment documents is the impacts on human infrastructure, our health, our communities are going to be really severe and devastating. And we have to only look to things like our experience of the 2019-2020 summer bushfires to corroborate that. But we have opportunities to mitigate and manage those risks. We can see that our healthcare system is going to be under significant strain in the coming decades, and that means that we can and should be investing further in resilience measures now in our healthcare system so that it's resilient. And that was a theme of the climate risk assessment that's really, really welcome. Adaptation requires far more attention and funding than it currently has. But there was equally a sense in the nature sections of the report that our ecosystems have to adapt or they will be left to go extinct. And that's a really disappointing approach from a government that has made a no new extinctions commitment, and in a context where we are a wealthy enough nation, a scientifically informed enough nation, to be able to support our ecosystems to adapt and to improve their resilience. We know that... Let me start that again. No extinction is inevitable. And we know how to mitigate and improve the resilience of a range of threatened species. But right now, we are committing less than 1 cent in every dollar in the budget. In fact, we're committing 0.06 of a dollar in the budget to managing nature impacts and to supporting our threatened species. This is setting us up to lose in the coming decades, to lose our reefs, to lose threatened species, to lose our koalas, because the government is not prioritising the protection of nature in its climate assessment or in the reforms to national nature laws.
Yeah, and Annika, I was reading an article in the Saturday paper a couple of weeks ago where they were quoting from the Environment Minister, Murray Watt, and what really struck me, how he was framing it all as a political problem. He'd say, oh, well, this, I'm going around, I'm talking to everyone. And, you know, the you know, fossil fuel industry is saying this and they're saying that and I'm finding a middle path. And I looked at it and I thought, what you're not seeming to understand is that the environment doesn't care about any of that. It's not a political problem. Mm. It's the amount of... largely the amount of emissions being emitted, gas emissions, fossil fuel emissions going into the air and into the environment. It's not a, for as far as the climate and Earth is concerned, it's not a political problem. So I wonder if that's part of the problem, that it's being framed as, you know, we're catering to all the different players, including people making profits out of fossil fuels emissions.
People making incredible eye-watering amounts of profits. I'd add some adjectives there, Jen. But absolutely, I think we are very beholden to the myth of the sensible centre and the idea in Australian politics that if we bridge the gap between where the coalition or the conservative side of politics is and where the centre-left or progressive side of politics with Labor is, that somewhere between those two poles is where Australia sits and where the right solution for Australia sits. But that just doesn't reflect the reality of the evidence or the extraordinary backsliding and radicalisation that we are seeing in the coalition right now. We really need the Australian government, which was elected with a commanding majority because the Australian public have rejected the idea that the heart of politics sits between the major parties. We need the Australian government that had that sweeping victory in May 2025 to get on with the job of reflecting the evidence in the development of policy. We want evidence-based climate, energy and environmental policy, not law reform outcomes or solutions that reflect, as you've just flagged, Jen, political constructs that aren't in the best interests of Australians or our economy, let alone the best interests of Australians and Australian nature.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned to me in a previous chat that we're the last generation, which by which I think you mean people alive now, but we're the last generation that can do anything to stop it getting to 3% global warming. Is that what you said?
Yeah, it's an enormous responsibility, but also an opportunity and a privilege for us. Right now, the world is starting year on year to experience around 1.5 degrees of global warming. In 2024, that threshold was breached for the first time. That needs to be an alarm bell for governments and corporations all around the world. But it is important to recognise that 1 year of temperature does not mean that we've permanently gone past the 1.5 degree threshold. It has to be if averaged over a period of several years, we're hitting over 1.5. But we know emissions are not where they need to be right now. The globe is still spewing significant amounts of carbon pollution into the atmosphere, well beyond what our natural carbon sinks can take out. Mm. So we will have baked in further warming than we've currently experienced. Mm. But what we haven't baked in is the warming that our children and grandchildren will experience at the end of this century in the coming decades. The choices we make over the next 10 years to accelerate action to get off our fossil fuel exports, those are the actions that our children and grandchildren will look to as what averted the very worst of the disasters that have been set out in documents like the climate risk assessment. Mm. That opportunity is still available to us.
Yeah.
But it will take this government and governments across the world recognising this crisis for what it is and the scale of the crisis and action that is required.
Mm.
And unfortunately, the Albanese government has not woken up to that and is not acting as a sensible kind of government in taking that risk seriously.
Mm, thank you. I'll just remind our listeners, you're listening to Think Again, 3CR, 855 AM on your dial, 3CR digital and streaming at 3cr.org.au. I'm Jennifer Burrell, and today we have Annika Reynolds from the Australian Conservation Foundation, or the ACF, on the line. Annika has been talking about recent developments relating to climate policy in Australia, what's happening with the climate itself, and how we really need to wake up and really address it, and the time is now, and we don't have much time. So, Annika, I guess you've been talking a bit about the government. So can you say what does the Australian government explicitly need to do to avert the worst climate catastrophe?
Thanks, Jen. So the good news is we know what has to be done and how to do it. The first thing is that the Australian government needs to kind of look at the recent weak 2035 target range that it committed to and put in place measures that actually meet and beat that target, that get us much closer to the 75%, 80% by 2035 that we know is both scientifically necessary but also economically feasible and beneficial for us to be reaching for. And that, to put a bit of flesh on the bone of that, folks may have noticed last week that the 2035 target announcement was accompanied by a few paltry business sweeteners, a couple of million dollars here, some redirected billions of dollars of funding that was already in the budget over here. There wasn't really anything, there were no real commitments for new regulations, new measures or schemes that are really going to accelerate action. We need further policy intervention that gets our corporates actually shifting their practices, shifting off coal and gas, that actually accelerates and pushes our biggest energy producers like AGL and Origin Energy in the electricity grid to actually put in place plans to close their coal-fired power stations. These are all feasible measures but require government action and an imperative to get our corporate sector and our biggest polluters to act. But fundamentally, Australia's biggest contribution to climate change remains our fossil fuel exports. It's equivalent to about 4.5% of global emissions. We need to tackle those, and we need to tackle them fast. That means actually charting a pathway off our fossil fuel exports, providing transition arrangements for communities that are engaged in the fossil fuel export industry, and working towards building up clean energy export alternatives that will ensure our prosperity into the future. And that's what the Future Made in Australia vision of the Albanese government should be doing. Fossil fuel corporates in Australia have taken us for a ride. They don't pay their fair share of tax. They lay off Australian workers whenever the industry is in a boom. They don't share the eye-watering profits that they make whenever the industry is in a boom. It's time to bring them under control and to pivot our economy towards the industries and ways of doing business that are not only better for our planet, but are better for our workers and are better for our economy and our national prosperity.
Thank you for that, putting that so clearly, Annika. And is there anything our listeners can do?
I think it's really important in moments like these when news is really confronting and can be emotionally devastating to take in. Climate change brings a lot of grief. I think it's really important to recognise that Australians overwhelmingly are already embracing climate action in the ways that we can as individuals, from buying an EV or taking your bike to work to investing in a household battery, where ordinary people are already driving significant action across Australia, and we see that in the data. The laggards are governments and polluting corporates. It's not the fault of individual families or communities. I want to really emphasise that. This is a systemic problem that our government is not systemically addressing. So when it comes to taking action, I really encourage folks to get involved in collective action. That's where we can amplify our impact, and that's where we can be directly communicating to government that they need to do things better and differently, because they're the problem, not us. So that means, you know, finding your local community climate action group, or getting involved in a peaceful protest, or volunteering with environment groups. Those are the kinds of actions that are going to build up our movement and impact so that we can have the systemic impact that we need.
Thank you so much again for coming on the program today and really helping us understand recent developments in Australia around climate change policy. And it has been really clarifying and illuminating. And thank you also for giving us a bit of hope that there will be change, but it's not too late to ward off the most catastrophic change for our future generations. And thanks for your suggestions for collective action as well, and that we can all together make change. So thank you for that, Annika.
Thanks so much, Jen. It's been a pleasure.
So that was Annika Reynolds from the Australian Conservation Foundation. So just a quick announcement. We have the Regenerating Communities... We have the Regenerating Communities Community Development Conference in Victoria at Borderlands. That's in October, from the 16th to the 18th of October. If you want more information, go to the Borderlands website and click the What's On button. And so thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to Think Again live on 3CR Community Radio today. If you want to contact us or comment on our program, this program or other programs, or give us any suggestions or feedback, please email borders@borderlands.org.au. Our programs are available by podcast on a variety of platforms and, of course, on the 3CR website at 3cr.org.au. To end our program for today, please enjoy Milkumana by King Stingray. Go.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.